Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, September the 18th, 2016, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, America. My name is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing fine. And how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just sensational.
Wow, sensational.
That means I'm a sensation, right?
Yes, you're a sensation. So that also means you're sensate, right? Or not?
Hey, well done. Boy, I really appreciate your linguistic derivation process, which means you study a lot of etymology, which is not really
entomology,
right?
Yes, I'm sorry. I got confused. I've been studying entomology, so I now I realize you're a human being, so I'll have to do a different study of humanology.
Ah, thank you very much. Well, I wanted
or
to start this week
or...
to fix. Oh, I apologize. I'm sorry I interrupted. Truly apologize.
I know.
No, I wanted to start in last week because I was railing with a. I'll call it my charlatan online, which there are many, but I had to correct the error I was making. I said his name was Kent Moore, but it was Kent Moores with an S, M-O-O-R-S. Just for the record, right, because if people check Moore, they won't find him. Find Kent Moores. They'll, you know, the computer corrects things and asks you if this is what you mean. So it may correct it, but I just wanted to. But that's the last of it. I don't want to name call any longer because there's so many people out there. I mean, it just alerted me to the fact that this wholesale lying, I mean, it's not even close. And that's why I think in the old days, the people were, you know, albeit they called them charlatans or what have you. But at the same time, they weren't just doing wholesale slaughter on the truth. I mean, it was totally ridiculous. He was telling and saying Warren Buffett had dumped like $9 billion and buying up Photovoltaic stock and all that. And that's not true. None of it's true at all. But people don't check into it, so they just take people's word at face value a lot of times. That's why you have consumer advocates and people like that who will try to protect this consumer, but in really in the name of national socialism. You have to draw the line a little bit on this whistleblowing type thing. In my opinion, no harm, no foul, but when people are asking for their money, their hard-earned cash, so to speak, and then they're not delivering or it's just really terrible what they're saying, I have a real problem with that. They're not even making that effort at the truth. It's so far afield. So, having said all that, I will probably name call for a while unless I really get bent on somebody. Because there's so many of it. It's so much of it. It's just a huge proliferation. And I was just listening to this person for a few minutes, and then they didn't reveal any information. They were just going on and on and on. People, that's some of the argument for this particular individual, that they will not reveal their source nor what they're investing in for quite a while. So they're sort of roping you in and try to hooking people. That goes into the planks that I talk about, health, solvency, and afianchetto. And on the health point, there's a group in Florida that does that too, where they have a group of intellectuals and what have you that talk about the health movement and nutrition. Well, they'll pitch you, and once you sign on a dotted line for their huge amount of gouging fees, I don't know where they get numbers that they come up with, but a friend of mine the other day had mentioned that a friend of his had spent nearly $30,000 in 1 month, and I don't know where they come up with these gouging figures to do such a thing. But once they get you, they pitch you information and you're sold on it, then they don't reveal any more truth. One of the truths that I want to repeat, and I think I've mentioned before, was the idea of natural sugars, fruit sugars, because they will condemn sugar across the board. They say you have sugar dependencies and all that ridiculous stuff. Well, I think it's a good dependency to have a fruit sugar dependency. I don't think it's a dependency. It's just the need of it. But the molecules of natural sugar are monosaccharides. They're single-celled sac sugars, okay? And if you even Google that online, you go online, you'll find a monosaccharide is digested in the stomach. Whereas polysaccharides, and it's my understanding, if you get into this in depth, that there are good polysaccharides, but just generally, polysaccharides when you're drinking soda pop and all these really awful artificial sugars, let's say artificial sugars, are absorbed in the liver. And then again, my understanding, that's not a good thing. You absorb in the liver, but it's a very good thing to digest in the stomach as long as you're not digesting at length. For instance, we're raw vegans, so we don't really espouse eating meat because it takes 4 or 5 days to get out of the gut, right? So that your body is really worn out from that whole thing. But having said that, this idea of the Hippocrates Institute, they condemn sugars when in reality you really need fruit sugar. Otherwise, I think when they're just in the greens and seaweed, are we going retrogressing back to the amphibian stage? What do you think of that in terms of my opinion? I think they're retrogressing back to becoming amphibians as we crawled out of the ocean. Right, Gabrielle?
Right. Well, you know, I think it's a problem because I think it's unbalanced. And I know a lot of people who eat primarily fruit on the raw vegan diet, and their health has improved tremendously. Now, I think for me, it's a little bit difficult to eat 80% fruit. I think that's a high number for me. But for some people, it works out really well. I do eat a lot of fruit. I sincerely believe in doing so. I probably eat maybe 60%, sometimes 70% fruit. So I probably do eat more fruit than I do greens and savory type foods, but everything I do eat is raw vegan. So I think it's very, very important. I mean, there's been a tremendous amount of studies done on people thriving on a high fruit diet. Now, that, you know, in the animal kingdom, you have gorillas and monkeys who eat a high fruit diet. Basically, they're eating mostly fruit. They're eating some vegetables, some greens, what's available to them, but their diet is primarily fruit. So I'm not saying that we should live like the gorillas, but they do thrive on that diet. So
right.
I think I mean, I have known people who have been cured of serious diseases, such as cancers, by eating a primarily fruit diet, a raw vegan diet that's full of fruit. And I was speaking to someone just a couple of months ago, a friend who recovered from MS, got out of the wheelchair by following the raw vegan diet, and she told me that the more fruit she eats, the better she feels. But it's not an easy thing to follow a high fruit diet. So for me, eating 60 or 70% fruit is really, really good. It works really well for me. And then I have a large salad with lots of vegetables and things. So, but I do try to get a lot of fruit into my system because I do think it's the best thing for the health. And as you said, it digests in the stomach. It's not white sugar. It's not a peripheral sugar that you're eating. It's a sugar that's directly coming to you from the fruit. It's a whole food that you're eating. So I think in that case, you're in good shape.
Well, you were mentioned about the natural animals like the gorillas and what have you, but they're also in a salubrious environment. They're not an industrial complex like human beings, and I think that takes a toll on the physical body. That's why we're always mentioning that the people need to be well-grounded in terms of fruit diets because they become, I use the term aphasia, but clinicians don't like that, but aphasia really, to me, is a good term for being spaced out. Like, you're not really, you're dysfunctional and socially. You can't function. And that happens to a lot of fruitarians because they're have this noise inundation. But then you've got these the gorillas, as you're talking about, or monkeys or what have you, that eat a high fruit diet, what have you. But they're also out in the wilds. They're grounded people. They don't have to deal with all the industrial noises and what have you. So my opinion is people don't have control in industrial environments when they're eating high fruit diets. And some of them will safely admit they become dysfunctional or spacey, or I say aphasic or what have you. But I think that you agree with that premise. That, and then if when they do that, they need to learn how to do some kind of way to introspection to calm themselves down, because the industrial complex will be nerve-wracking, and then the fruit diet doesn't really lend itself to grounding, per se. So I've heard a lot of that. So that's one of the reasons why I don't recommend high fruit, because of that aphasic issue. And I know we've talked about that in the past, at least prior to this, right?
I agree with you, and that's why I don't follow a really high fruit diet. But for the people that can do it, they do thrive on it. I'm not one of them. I think probably about 70% fruit is my maximum, and I probably usually am closer to around 60%. So everything is individual.
Right.
And
I think it's a balancing with the green. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're not getting spacey, then I think doing a high fruit diet is great. But I think what you said was important about being in a salubrious location, being closer out to nature, it's easier to do that than dealing in an industrial setting and working in an industrial type position or whatever, working, you know, or driving or whatever, where you have to focus a lot. I don't think a high fruit diet really lends itself to that.
That's what I mean. And then that's what I'm saying in terms of we say also, if you're going raw, you probably should be using some form of introspective technique to ground yourself. Like we do a contemplation, which is the proper term for meditation. Meditation is like a misinterpretation, contemplation, like a 30-minute meditation-like practice. And I think that helps ground people. Like you're working from the inside out, working with your inner energies to ground yourself physically. But that's more on a spiritual side, but it really affects your physical side if you're not, because that's why raw people don't stay raw. Again, they get in this dysfunctionality routine because they say that thing, get too high type business that they talk about in drugs and all that. But the dysfunctionality socially, meaning that we're in an industrial complex, you have to drive cars, open doors with keys, you have to do quantitative behavior. It's not all qualitative. You don't sit in a chair all day long and talk about philosophy. You know, people have to go to work, so that means they prepare foods, they have to be able to watch the clock, you know, they have to focus on things, and if you're dysfunctional, you're not able to focus. I mean, even they talk about in the future, most of the people will be autistic, and we've seen a high rate of increase, but in my opinion, autism is the soul of the person outside the body. They're dysfunctional because they don't want to be participating in this industrial era because it's so anti-biological. It really is in terms of how people get by. They don't, because in the Western world, they retire at, I think, a fairly early age in terms of the mid-60s or whatever it is now in terms of that. But in reality, that's just a very short period of time of one's life, because I think you can live indefinitely and grand longevity, really, when you get right down to it. So, but we're not really talking about that because, in my opinion, we're in a labor camp in the West. We're all doing things for the bottom line of profit, and that becomes the issue. And people are used like cannon fodder, a big body turnover, big body count. I mean, the medical industry claims they're trying to do health, but really they just cut off parts, burn parts. What is that? Burn, drug burn and die, you know, and cut and die. And that's kind of a joke about the raw veganism. And then But see, my attitude is it's not really contrived. I think they really think that they're doing the right thing, but they're ignorant of the truth in the matter. They really don't get above it and have a supervision of what takes place. They're sort of down in the low levels of not really understanding the facts in the matter. just like they have all these groups and, you know, the Cancer Foundation, Leukemia, Fight Leukemia, MS, all that stuff, and they raise all these millions of dollars to do what? Why? Well-paid administration, mainly charitable organizations. That's been known for a long time. There's a movie called My Man Godfrey was even talking about that. They're going on this scavenger hunt, and they raise money for charity, and she was joking about, well, the money never gets to the charities because it doesn't, because they eat it up by the administration. That was back in 1938 when they were talking about, you know, over 80 years ago. And so they're still doing it today and haven't really put a dent in that whole thing. But I understand things are expensive, and I understand that the admins are complaining about it because they can't raise enough money to work in those areas, right? And then what happens? Because they can't get the money to do the research, they never really get to the whole thing. And then what are they studying? They're studying epidemiology, you know, epidemic stuff, which I think is ludicrous, because if you go back to those professors of the past in the early 19th century, Louis Pasteur, Alfred Hahnemann, and Anton Beauchamp, they had three different schools of thought. You had a biochemistry with Beauchamp, you had Hahnemann with homeopathy, and you had Pasteur with epidemiology. And if you look at that, and it's really simple, you can see how those schools of thought will part company with each other, because the homeopaths are always complaining about the allopaths, which is the epidemiologist. And then you have the biochemists, which are hardly ever talked about because they're talking about enzymes and microzymists, you know, and they think it's too complex and what have you. And they're really not getting into disease because they're using language more or less, because the Beauchamp people, I think, are more intelligent in reference to disease, not at ease. I was hearing Bob Proctor talk about that in the documentary The Seeker, that he was actually looking at that word. And I really appreciate it because I very rarely hear people agree with me or even acknowledge it. It's like an acknowledgement of the word dis-ease means not at ease. And at ease would be when you're in a military thing. At ease, troops, right? So I got
what?
To a joke. That was good, right? I got to a joke.
I didn't catch the last part of the sentence, so I'm sorry.
I circle around the jokes all the time. You ever notice that? It's pretty funny.
No, but I didn't, you trailed off and I missed it.
Oh, you didn't hear the joke?
Oh,
I was saying about, remember Proctor was talking about, he was agreeing with my opinion about dis-ease, the word disease,
right.
Not at ease, right? But at ease is what they use in the Army. Okay, at ease, attention, and then they go, at ease, troops.
Oh, I get it. All right.
So I said, I circle around to a joke. I finally got to a joke to make you laugh, and get off this, the serious thing, you know, I have to watch out by a propensity to become affected by serious disease, right, SD. But that's really the worst disease there is on the planet. If there is such a thing when you're not at ease, the only really one is serious disease, SD, right?
Right.
Maybe we could raise money for SD, right? Do some research on serious disease.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think that would be a good idea. The Serious Disease Foundation. We're taking donations for that tonight. No, just for the record, I'm not doing that. I'm just making a joke, you know, so don't send me money for the Serious Disease Foundation. Please do not do that. That was a joke, right? So you know that, Gabriella. I'll probably get checks this week for the Serious Disease Foundation, right? We're doing research on serious disease, right? Oh, my. And also ESP. We're doing studies with ESP, too, and we know what ESP is. What's ESP, right? What is that, Gabriella?
Extra silly people.
No, extremely silly people. Silly people.
Can't we be extra silly? Or we just have to
I guess you can be extra silly. But it's really going extremely silly people, ESP. And we truly are on this show. For all those people to get a kick out of my explanation, I go to people in the marketplace and say, do you know what ESP is? I say, sure, it's extrasensory perception. No, the derivation is extremely silly people. And never fail to get a laugh, right? Unless you have serious disease, right? And then you get a groan, like that, boo, like that. When people have SD, they groan at the puns. Of course, you're supposed to groan at a pun anyway. Even if you don't have SD, if you're groaning at puns, that's okay. That shows that you're reacting properly. Well, you know, know me, a comedian out of work, right? Nobody will hire me because I slay him in the aisles, right?
So
and the club owners,
said,
they don't want me to kill, right? Well, that's a phrase in a celebrity world, you know, you killed, right? But you really,
yeah.
The club owners don't want
me
to do that because they want the audience to come back to calling me. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I apologize for interrupting, but that's also a phrase in business. You killed it. You did really well.
Yeah, exactly. But I make the joke about the club owners won't hire me because I slay them in the aisles, and they don't want the audience to die. They don't want to become morticians, right? So
right.
They're in cahoots. If you're a good comedian, the club owners are in cahoots with the morticians, right? They get 50% of when the comedian does a good job and he kills, right?
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, you know. But I've been a kidder since I was a child, you know, always making puns in classrooms and getting in trouble. So, yeah, but, well, I mean, can't we have some fun? No, we have to be serious, right? We have to be all serious. And look at our subject, the bankruptcy, international bankruptcy. How do you make light of that? Well, I mean, because it is ridiculous. The whole thing is totally absurd that the bankers won't get into an approximate mathematics, and they're not willing to allow an overage of a few pennies. See, and then they'll shoot you an overdraft statement if your account's not balanced. Well, who can balance their account? It's just ludicrous. You know that over a period of time and quantity of trying to sort and getting down to specifics is nearly impossible because of the it's still a relative state of inertia. You get going, you can't stop, and then you're talking about a massive amount of papers that one person is trying to sort, and their expertise may not be accountancy or bookkeeping. You see what I mean? So it becomes a factor of trying to sort things in an unsortable world. Right? It really is not a sortable world. That's why mathematics is really not a perfect science because it doesn't take in variables. The good example of that would be gearing. Like you have a standard gearing in an automobile. And years ago, I developed a Western pulley, I called it. There was a guy named Paul Western that showed it to me. And if people can remember, you go on picnics and they have those telescoping glasses. They go up and down. You know what I'm talking about? They kind of telescope and they'll have a smooth transitional point when they get to a larger part of the cup. You know what I'm trying to say? Like a cone. It presses down flat, and then you raise it out, and it has different layers of a cone shape. Do you know what I'm talking about, Gabriella?
No.
I probably have to show you. But anyway, so the idea in machinery, you have a gearing differential. Like you have a bigger gear to increase the speed of an engine, and then there's a differential between the gears. Like it means a space. A differential means there's a space between the gears. On a Western pulley, there's no space because it smoothly moves. It would move the belt along this smooth thing. And I'll show you. I'll draw it for you later on. But at the same time, okay. The gearing differential means that there's a lag in the acceleration. And then that was an issue about, they were talking about, if you had a pure electric car in terms of all the statics, not the Tesla, I'm not for the Tesla. I condemn it just like I condemn the gold standard. I'm not into that. I adamantly will state that because they're a burden on the infrastructure. But if we had a rheostatic pure electricity engine, then you'd have proper gearing. And if you had a Western pulley, then now you have an issue of deceleration. It would be going so fast because you'd have no gear differential. Now, I discovered that with a gentleman by the name of Paul Western about 40 years ago. So I called the Western pulley because he showed it to me. But I have not talked to him in years. But I remember that. And the reason why I'm bringing it up, I have no idea. But it's rather interesting. There was a segue in there somewhere. And people go, oh, Grantham, it was way back there. And I'll get letters this week about where I got off the track, right? I am hilarious, no doubt about it. But we have a lot of fun on this show, and there's a lot of really cool information. And again, it's a matter of we do like to talk about, and that was my main premise, is the international bankruptcy since 1930 Geneva Convention in the description. And The answer of it is really trying to measure properly the issue of coming out of bankruptcy, and I don't think we can until we can, the bankers will allow approximate mathematics. Approximate mathematics is the real issue. And until we do that, then we'll never be out of bankruptcy, and we'll be under the Section 1 of the Uniform Commercial Code of the 12 sections of the UCC. So we'll be in that probably for perpetuity because we can't sort out the problem with the math. Now, I mean, maybe. I just don't know. There'd have to be some symposium or what have you to say, oh, okay, we understand now, because it's all relative, and you just can't measure as a collection. You can't do it. As a group, you can't measure it because there's so many different options in terms of the uniqueness of individuals, so we never can get on the same page. I mean, really, they always talk about aliens, right? And what do I say? If you line up 10 people in a row, they're all different. There's nobody the same. You don't dress the same. I mean, if you put on the same uniform and somebody's heavier or thinner, you see, it's really, I would say, if you want to find the aliens, just look amongst your peers, so to speak. You know what I mean by that, Gabrielle? You've heard me talk about that. They're trying to find the aliens, right? Right.
Yeah.
Look at your neighbors.
No two people are alike. So.
Correct. And completely unlike. That's why I talk about parents that have two children. You see the uniqueness in your children. You see the uniqueness in people. You bond with two people that are completely, incontrovertibly dissimilar. And they will admit that. They're completely different. And there's a beauty in that. At the same time, there's also a caveat. Because we're always saying, well, there's a collection. We all think the same. Do we really? I mean, for all those cosmic consciousness New Agers out there, I'm poo-pooing that completely. Oh, we're all together. It's a warm, fuzzy idea, but we're all individuals. So what do? We learn to tolerate each other. And I'm not even into the immune system of the body. I call it the tolerance system. We tolerate things. We don't defend ourselves against things. That immunity thing means a war or a barrier type thing. My opinion is you learn to tolerate things, let it pass through. You see, it's like talking to people, you become a compassionate sounding board, you respect what they have to say, you don't necessarily have to agree with it. I never said that. In reality, we don't agree with anything. That's why we're always trying to teach people how to do self-speak, talk to yourself first, understand yourself. It's kind of like a self-realization type thing, which bleeds over into spiritual ideas, which I won't do. But there is an issue about self-speak, if you know what you're talking about, because a lot of your pundits, New Age pundits, will take advantage of their audience that way, because they know when they give speeches, they can tune into words and what have you, and they know they can feel their way through it, so they play an exploitation with that. And they are unaccountable a lot of times, and you know my big thing about accountability, we need to be accountable for everything in terms of that, and therefore it doesn't necessarily mean we'll be able to agree with everything, and I don't like that phrase, agreeing to disagree. That's just total rubbish. That's New Age claptrap, and I really don't like that at all. Well, and then they say, well, we don't care what you like, Grantham. Okay, thank you very much, but I have a lot of dear friends. All right, so we're getting down to the last few seconds of the show. Time flies when you're having fun, or it flies by when you're having no fun. When the flies are bugging you, it's not any fun. I never really thought about that, but that's funny, right? All right, Gabriella, thank you for being on the show this week. I really appreciate your commentary. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Okay, great. I need to blow off about 30 seconds. Can you sing a song for me? Oh, you were singing a song a little bit earlier about the snow. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
That's not
maybe
what
it
I was
that
singing.
Song.
It was
a, still
it was
a little early in the
Christmas
season
song.
For that. But you know the stores are going to start getting out their tinsel and what have you. What?
It's a little early for Christmas. But I was singing a Christmas song. I don't remember what it was. I have no
I don't
memory.
Either, you know?
I just know it was a Christmas
exactly.
song.
Absolutely. Well, that was good. We discussed the music. We didn't really sing a song, and I was able to get rid of 30 seconds, so I really appreciate that a lot, too.
Well, I'm sure you'll be condemned if you end the show 30 seconds early.
Well, I'm going to go now, though. This is Grantham Taylor Hughes. Have a great week, And goodbye for now.